As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, welcome. We have a very special guest, Anne Claude, with us up in Montreal. Hi, Anne Claude.
Hi, everyone.
Anne Claude is a traffic manager and operations partner in a Montreal-based marketing agency, a full-time mother, and a woman who loves physical activity, especially jogging and climbing, and you will hear more about those. She's lived with narcolepsy for 25 years before receiving her diagnosis in 2018. Now, as a Rising Voices of Narcolepsy speaker, she hopes to deconstruct the preconceptions and cliches that surround this neurological disorder.
Okay, so, well, this is my story. Welcome, everyone. I hope I'm going to be entertaining. We'll start this story at my little town where I grew up. I grew in Salaberry de Valleyfield, which is close to Montreal, Canada. Just as a story, Quebec is a pretty nice province if you happen to come and visit. And Lac-Saint-Jean is 6 hours and a half from my house. So we used to drive a long road to go to my summer house. And there's stories that's already super fun about this. I was a super nice kid when I was in car with my parents. You know, those kids that are so excited to go at their nice place. Summer house was just, so summer vacations were part of my best memories. And as soon as we were in the car, I used to ask my parents, are we there yet? And they said, well, you know, yeah, Uncle, we're going to be there soon. And I used to fall asleep. And they were driving through Quebec until Quebec City, which is about 4 hours from my house. And I woke up, we had a little snack or something, go back into the car. Are we there yet? Yeah, soon, Uncle, we're coming. And I was then fall asleep for the 2 hours and a half left for the road and go to my summer house. So I was pretty easy in the car. I didn't enjoy the beauty of my Provence, but it was easy to go there with me. I grew up a fine woman, an ordinary Wonder Woman, I used to say. At the college, I participated to 3 international theater festival, university theater festival. I have a communication baccalaureate and a master's in management. At the age of 23, I was already a TV director for the Weather Network, which is a television station based in Montreal. My mother would certainly ask me to calm down one day. She wished me to do less things. I used to do a lot of things at the same time, all the time. I developed a strong passion for adrenaline and sports. So name the sports, I might have been tried it. Ski, trekking, kayak, climbing, running, I did it all. And I met Julie when I was pretty deep down into climbing. And she came to have a lesson. She wanted to try climbing. She was a cancer survivor, a brain cancer survivor. And she was left with, after the treatment, with this weird symptoms when she used to have a really strong positive emotion, she used to collapse and make seizures. So that was a pretty weird teaching session for me, because she was there with her boyfriend. And as soon as she was a little bit high on the wall and starting, you know, to have this feeling of the height, she needed to ask her boyfriend to bring her down so she can collapse and make a small seizures. And then she would wake up and go back again on the wall. And she did that several times. And I was like completely amazed by this woman, so full of strength and full of will. And despite that, she was going back and back and back on the wall. So I never met Julie again after that. I hope she's well today. But she made a great, great, great impression on me over there. Being a producer, television directors, this is pretty fun, but this is also pretty demanding. Waking up at 4 a.m. in the morning to be at the television station at 5, it's tough on the routine. And after a while, I decided to change and to take a desk job. Was probably, well, not a mistake, but certainly a different. It was a bad job. I didn't like it at all. It was really boring. And because the job was not my cup of tea, I was looking to go to have some fun during my spare time. And I thought it would be a great idea to go back to theater, which was my first passion. And because I was not so much deep down into the amateur surroundings, I didn't know a lot of people. It was tough for me to join a troupe. And so I decided to direct and produce my own play. Now, if you really want to do a burnout, this is the perfect recipe. Full-time job, full-time directing and producing a theater play. Don't do this at home. This is not a good thing. I've been doing it. It took me about 6 months and a half of my life. And these were the 6 months and a half, the more demanding I ever had. From 6 a.m. in the morning to 1 a.m. at night, I was working all minute of my day. And I got, of course, extremely tired. I started to have some weird symptoms that were kind of referring to burnout. And just like everybody who was that close to burnout, what did I do? I denied. I said, no, I can do it. I can do it. I need to do it. I had to deliver this theater play. Failing was not an option. Remember, I was a Wonder Woman. And so one day, something pretty weird happened. I was with my colleague and I was talking. We used to chat and make some jokes. And when I was about to make a joke and I thought this joke was super funny, I started to feel my face like there was turning into jello. And the perfect image to describe this feeling is our old prime minister, Jean Chrétien. This is, no offense, he was a great prime minister, but he had this this particularity about his face. He had the face falling and I felt I was falling just like that. And I was so afraid about this. And everybody told me, no, Anne, you just look like you. No, we don't see anything. It's okay. And it was only when I was making jokes and I thought I was funny. People were making jokes that were hilarious. And that was not happening. Only when, so that was super crazy. There was no way I would go to see a doctor and say this kind of thing. I mean, I'm not, sounds so crazy, too crazy. And I thought about, it made me remember though about Julie and the seizures I saw because of the emotions that was related to this feeling. And so I said, okay, you know, that said there's something in my brain, might be cancer. So instead of going to see a doctor, because I was that close to burnout and I didn't want them to stop me from my crazy routine, I decided to do everything to avoid cancer. So I bought earplugs to speak with my cell phone far away. And I ate blueberries and I added sports to my routine as well. So I was climbing harder. So I was climbing, doing theater and doing work. That was a super great recipe. I was so tired at the end of it. The great news is that the theater play happened, and then I was able to sleep again. Yeah, sleep was kind of something I forgot into the equation about being healthy. And when I was capable of sleeping and resting again, something super nice happened. The feeling, the jokes, and all of this disappeared. It just stopped. And so I thought, oh my God, I did the right thing. Cancer is away. And I go up with my life. I met my husband, and soon we had just amazing two babies. Now, I thought I was sleep deprived while doing theater. I can tell you that being a parent is another defi. Soon I realized that it was pretty demanding having a child when my son was there. And there's this story so funny. One night I was resting, and my husband was cooking chicken. And when I got up from bed, I went into the chick to get the meal for the supper. And it was beef on the table. And I said, honey, where's the chicken? And he said, well, there's no chicken. I said, no, you cook chicken. I saw it. I smelled it. I mean, there was a chicken. He said, no, there were no chicken. So that was weird as well. I knew I was sleep deprived, yet I didn't quite understood what happened. And I said, okay, it might have been, you know what, forget it. We had another baby, Emily, who was another defi as well. She was tough on nights. She didn't sleep a night until a year and a half. And because I was gifted, actually, my husband had trouble. He was always tired, and he was sleeping a lot, and he was unable to nap during the day. But I was capable of sleeping everywhere. I could sleep in the car, in front of TV. So I was able to get back my sleep I was losing at night while taking care of Emily. So I took great care of her for a while. When it was too hard, I used to sleep in the room that was in the basement. But sometimes it was so hard, you know, as a mother, when you hear your baby scream, even if she's on the second floor, I mean, you go and you see and you try to go and take care of them. But it happens that sometimes I was sleeping in that room and I was going to take care of Emily, and she was sleeping back again in her bed, so in her crib. Okay, well, and when she was finally doing her night and sleeping just like a normal human being, you know, like when it sometimes happened that the kids starts to do, it seems that I was unable to get out of this cycle I was in. The reason why is that I had been doing this for too many, many years, many times. So every night at 2 a.m., I was waking up for an hour or 2 hours. And every day at 1 p.m., I was falling asleep like crazy, incapable of staying awake. And I was stuck into that rhythm. And I was just going tired more and more and more until the jello feeling in my face came back. And I got afraid. I had forgot about it totally. But when it got back, I said, oh my God, the cancer is again over there. And so I decided to try to do this healthy routine and, you know, the hair plugs and everything again. But it wasn't enough. And soon it was not only my face that was falling, it was my arms. It was I had to put my head on the desk because I was falling literally. So it was getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And I didn't want to ask, and I didn't want to go and see a doctor. Hey, doc, you know what? When I make a joke and I think I'm funny, I'm falling. That was so crazy. I didn't want to talk about it to anybody. It happened that my husband, I told you a bit earlier, had trouble with his own sleep. And while he was looking for his symptoms, he discovered the descriptions of narcolepsy. And he brought that to me and said, hey, honey, look at this. This looks pretty much like you. And I read the descriptions, but there were some stuff that might have been, but some of those that didn't relate to me at all. So I just said, no, you know what, forget it. That's not me. Nah. And maybe a few months after that, he brought me the Epworth scale, which is a questionnaire that you feel that will tell you if you might have sleep problem or not. And of course, I had a super high score over there, but that wasn't enough. Again, it was definitely the jello feeling that was getting stronger and stronger and more invasive that decided me to go and see my family doctor and to ask for an MRI because the cancer was getting stronger. So I had to admit that I had something wrong. He gave me a notice and I saw a neurologist who already asked for a sleep study. I thought that neurologist was so bad. Why did he give me a sleep study? I don't need a sleep study. I fall asleep like that at night. No problem. I can nap anytime during the day. There was no problem with my sleep. So when the lab called me to have this sleep study, I just turned it down. You know, I don't need it. But the jello was there and the jello was still more and more and more present. So a month maybe after that, I called again the neurologist and said, you know what, maybe I need your sleep study. I'll try it. And so I didn't turn down the sleep studies number two. And without any surprise for anybody but me, I got diagnosed with narcolepsy type 1, which is with cataplexy. And I was 38 years old. Narcolepsy, well, this is a chronic and neurological disorders of the sleep and wake cycle. It is an autoimmune disease that affects one in 2,000 people. There's two types of narcolepsy, which is with or without cataplexy. And I'm the lucky one. I got the narcolepsy with cataplexy. Symptoms. Now, I'm going to read because there's a description. Excessive daytime sleepiness. They say it's a period of extreme sleepiness during the day that feels comparable to how someone without narcolepsy would feel after staying awake 48 to 72 hours per day. When the doctors ask me, when did you first have those sleeping episodes? To me, it was crystal clear. High school, first grade. I was sleeping all my courses during the afternoon. It was so bad. I just, if that would have been occurring for so long, I had to think about it a little bit, right? Cataplexy are striking and sudden episode of the muscles, weakness usually triggered by a strong emotion, such as laughing, surprise, or anger. The severity may vary from slacking of the jaw, buckling of the knees, or falling down. The duration may be for a few seconds to several minutes, and the person remain fully conscious all the time during the episode. So you can talk to someone having a cataplexy. He's totally there. So for me, it wasn't cancer. I had to admit. Now this third one, symptoms, this is pretty hard. It was hard for me to acknowledge. Hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations. These are visual, auditory, or tactile hallucination upon falling asleep or waking up. These can be frightening, confusing. That could have been the chicken. Could it be? It happened to me that is more audio than a visual thing. So maybe Emily was not always asking for mommy at 2 a.m. in the morning. Maybe. It's still not clear as of today. And the chicken, probably. I had to think about all these probable episodes. Where were they? That was freaking out myself. Sleeping paralysis. This is the inability to move for a few seconds or a few minutes upon falling asleep or waking up. Can be accompanied by hallucinations, which is a nice cocktail. To me, those could have been when I thought I was stuck into deep sleep because I had this feeling of not being capable of moving, but I always associated that to a big night's sleep so deep, that's so good. So for me, that was super positive. Okay. And of course, the disrupt nighttime sleep. All those nights I've been awake for so many, many hours without being capable of falling asleep again. Oh God. Okay. To get a diagnosis, you need to do a polysomnogram and a multiple sleep latency test. That typically is, it's a 48 hours of sleep study that include a nighttime portion and a daytime nap portion to record one's brain waves. The diagnosis is mainly based on how quickly and frequently the person goes into the rapid eye movement sleep cycle. So, and you need to wear this gear and other stuff for a day. And this is really, really, you need to be sick to get those tests. And you will sleep if you need it. A treatment. There's a lot of stuff and you need to take wake promoters or stimulant for the daytime sleepiness. Nighttime medication for sleep, for sure. Antidepressant for cataplexy. And my favorite, schedule nighttime, daytime naps. You need to naps during the day. To somebody who was only taking Tylenol when she used to had a cold, that was a lot of stuff to take. Getting a light diagnosed, that was pretty hard. There's a lot of misunderstanding all around you. My parents, it was really, really tough at the beginning. I thought I would have lost them because we were not talking so much. It was a tough period. I had to get some work accommodation for sure. It was tough to find a place for me to get those naps at first, but now it's perfectly okay. And my husband helped a lot, especially for me to recognize when I was getting sleepiness, because I used to activate myself instead of going to sleep when I was starting to feel tired. My behavior was completely upside down. For the future, well, actually, this is only where my story first starts, because for me, it's only the beginning, you know. I've started something called Narcolepsie Québec. I believe I was left alone with this diagnosis at first, and this was really, really hard. I thought to myself, nobody should experience being alone with this kind of diagnosis. And so I tried to make people meet other people with this disease, because that was my first goal at first. I felt like an alien that day when I got out from the doctor's office, and I thought, if I'm an alien, who are the others? And so this is the purpose of Narcolepsie Québec. And for the rest, I will continue skiing, but with my kids, kayaking, certainly with my kids, doing bicycle with my kids, climbing with my kids, running with them as well. Actually, I will continue to do all the stuff I like, and I will find other dreams, and there will be other great things. The story is only better because with the diagnosis, I'm less tired and the life is just better. Why am I doing this tonight? Why am I talking to you about narcolepsy? Well, being narcoleptic or not, one day you will be sleep deprived. It will happen to everybody. Remember that sleepiness doesn't always look like sleepy. Nobody could ever thought I would be a narcoleptic, yet I might have been sick for a long, long time. In fact, it takes about 8 to 15 years on average to get a diagnosis between the appearance of the symptoms and the diagnosis. And that's a long period. And people try to treat themselves or are mistreated or misdiagnosed. And that's pretty tough. We think that about 50% of the people with this disease are currently not diagnosed. So the more we talk about it, the more people stop to believe that being a narcoleptic is being somebody depressed and always tired. When the more we deconstruct those cliche, the sooner the people will receive the diagnosis. And I do this with Rising Voices. This is an amazing program by Julie Flygare and the Project Sleep. And if you are interested to do just as I did tonight, I really, really recommend you to get in touch with Julie, because she's over there and super amazing.
Yay! And Claude! Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
And Claude, how did you actually, I don't remember how you found about Rising Voices. How did you decide to get involved?
Actually, I never told you. I told in my presentation that I wanted to meet other people with narcolepsy because I felt I didn't fit the descriptions. And at first I got all into those groups, Facebook groups about narcolepsy. And over there, there was one from Montreal. And I think there was a girl over there who named you. And she said, well, there's this girl in California called Julie Flyger. Find something like that. You will have some more answers about your questions, because I was so full of questions. And I, of course, well, the Rising Voices were starting. And I said, okay, I just want to do this. I need to do this. I need to talk to some, I wanted to meet you and I wanted to meet other people. And that was my way to reach other narcoleptic. And yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, having a theater background, especially, I'm sure everyone can tell, like, you're just so animated and you have so much presence and you're an incredible presenter.
I didn't say at the beginning of my presentation, but English is not my first language. I'm a French frog, as we say in Quebec.
So, and not only has she been an incredible participant in English, but of course, you know, she had already, before we even talked about doing it as a broadcast, you'd already translated all your slides into French. She made the World Narcolepsy Day fact sheet into French, which is available in our toolkit. If you guys download the toolkit, there's a French version of the fact sheet, thanks to Anne Claude. And yeah, so how's it going with Narcolepsy Quebec, and what is the French community like in general?
Well, I only see the French from France from my Facebook feeds, and it doesn't seem that they are pretty well. I mean, they ask a lot of questions about the meds, and they seem to have a lot of problem. So I don't know if there's any organization over there that helps them, or, well, there's the INC. There's a lot, some stuff, but I mean, all the speaking on the feeds are, I mean, there's a lot of people over there for sure. So people need to talk, people need to share. That's something I'm pretty, more in France than in Quebec. The feeds in Quebec are not so active. Yet I've been able to make people to reach and meet each other few times with Narcolepsy Quebec, and every time it was amazing. There was this man, an old man, and he said, in my all entire life, it is the first time I've met other people with narcolepsy. And that was amazing. And at the end of the meeting, that was way too long for narcoleptic people, he shook my hand and he said, welcome into the family. So that was these, every moment, there were not so many, but all of these events that I made happen, they were amazing. And it was pretty rich. And every time, stories are really interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's getting a little, it's hard. You need to put a lot of energy into that. And I have my two kids over there and my life, I'm working full time. So I try to put a bit of energy every time I can.
Very rewarding, though. So thank you for doing that.
Matthew Horsnell, I have another friend living with narcolepsy in Quebec. Oh, can you share a little about the work you are doing raising awareness locally? Well, for now, the work is only, I'm working with a doctor from the sleep center. And we're trying to, I put together a Facebook page called Narcolepsy Quebec. So you need to join if you want to be there and get all this information. And basically, for now, this is only a meeting. So a random meeting I organized. Last year, we had 3-4 meetings with a peer in presence. With the pandemic, this is more like virtual. I did one a month ago, and I promised the persons I'm in contact with, I promised I would organize another one. So if your friend, Matthew, wants to join, he may reach me on Facebook or join Narcolepsy Quebec page and ask, and I will be super happy to just add him to the mailing list until the next meeting. Another from Matt, your husband sounds like a great support. Mm-hmm. How has your support grown with other families and friends? Well, I said in my presentation that it was pretty hard for my parents to admit that something could have been there for so long at first. But it was only at first. After a few months, when they saw me with those symptoms, when I was unable to hide anymore, they were there just like before, and probably more than ever. We are a pretty close family, and everybody are now talking about narcolepsy. They're not ashamed of it, and they don't treat me like I'm now. I would say that all my colleagues at work are super supportive, and all my friends are super supportive, and everybody are super supportive. They all had pretty tough reaction at the beginning, say, no, you can't be narcoleptic. That can't be you. But at the end, yeah, I mean, this is who I am and who I was. So everybody knows, and everybody's great.
You know, having children is always, well, first of all, bravo for being a mother, like with narcolepsy. I know that the mothers out there really probably were like, yes, during that part. But how has it been as far as like their understanding of narcolepsy? Like, was there a specific day you remember telling them for the first time? Or, you know, are there any conversations about it?
Yeah, well, my son used to say that when I'm having a cataplexy, I look like a zombie. He understood just yesterday, probably, when I was revising all my slides, and I was looking at the Jell-O, and I explained him, you know, Jell-O and Jean Chrétien and my face. And I saw in his face that he, for the first time, understood what was a cataplexy. And he said, oh, mommy, wow, this is weird. And I said, yeah, this is really weird. My daughter was afraid. She got the sleep disorders as well, so she was pretty, it was tough for her to acknowledge. They both say that they don't like the mommy disease, they don't like me since I have narcolepsy, but I told them, you know, honey, you've been knowing me as a narcoleptic all your life. I mean, I was sick you always knew me like this, but since I need to nap, and I nap every day, it's bugging them, but that's okay.
Maybe when they're teenagers and they want to do stuff and get in trouble, they might appreciate that you're napping, you know, then they can
certainly find something to bug me. There are smart kids for sure, but they're amazing, and they've been amazing since they're born anyway. So I have great kids, pretty smart.
You did mention too about a 21K, what's that? A road race or something?
It's a half marathon. I made a half marathon in Montreal. Emily was probably 2 or 3 years old. And because I was tired, I was trying to get in shape, and doing sport was a way for me to manage my sleep for many, many years. And I did a half marathon. It was an amazing goal for me. And I wish I would do another one day.
I know you will.
You've been running. Was it a marathon or a half marathon?
I've done 3 marathons.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Just take it slowly. I didn't win them. I did not win these races, but I finished them. So yeah, I did run walking. So I ran for 8 minutes and I walked for 2 minutes. That's how I did all 3 of them.
I've been dreaming. That was an idea I got for Narcolepsy Quebec. I was unable to make it happen, but I wanted to do a marathon à relais. So a relay marathon. So everybody would sign in for a marathon, but you just do the thing that you can do. Let's say you can run 1K and the other one can run 5, and you just pass the témoin to the other one. So at the end, all the narcolepsy wins the marathon or the medal.
Oh, I love that. That's a great idea.
Marathon Montréal didn't want it. It say, okay, if you want to do marathon, you need to run from the beginning to the end. I was like, no, forget
it. That's awesome. You said your husband helped you because as you were getting tired, your inclination was to become more active, you know, to activate yourself. And I think when we talked about it before, you even said like that meant you would go and try to like unload the dishwasher or like do things. And then he would help you to say, no, maybe you should take a nap. Is that he would help you like kind of come down as opposed to trying to energize up?
He barely took me by the shoulder and brought me to my room and say, you need to nap now. Stop emptying the dishwasher. This is not what you're supposed to do. And so he was stopping me by literally physically show me my bed, because, you know, the image, the comparison I can make is with people who have kids or who had kids. You know, there's always this turning point when they're pretty young, when they get tired, they get super active and they run everywhere. And this is the part where the kids are super dangerous for themselves. They can hit and, you know, and break something or anything. And it seems that it feels that it was like this, but all the time for me, I was always like getting active because I was always fighting, probably sleeping. My husband is super helping actually, and still is today. One other thing he made me realize is that it's better if you nap before you're feeling sleepiness. So I'm not waiting for feeling sleepiness. I nap on a precise moment every day. And that helps me a lot. Today with the med, I only nap half an hour per day and I can do my whole schedule, my whole day without anything else. So that's pretty good. But
what time do you nap then when you schedule it?
11:30. I used to have this sleepiness at 1 p.m. So I brought the nap just a bit before. So 11:30 is perfect time. Between this and noon, I'm not there, I'm napping.
I love it. I want to thank you again, and Claude, for a wonderful presentation tonight.
The Project Sleep podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.